everybody. Welcome to Strength Deposition. I'm your host, Chuck Zarowski. Oftentimes we do this, we do the podcast at the Strength Depot Gym in Plymouth, Michigan, but we're kind of doing something different today. We decided that we were going to have a couple different guests over the next couple weeks, and instead of having them come in the studio, that's kind of difficult to do at times. We wanted to try and reach out to some other people, and one of the people that I truly wanted to reach out to was Nate Harvey. Nate's a writer for Elite FTS, and he's prolific. I mean, if you guys have seen any of the stuff that he's done with athletes, not just, you know, because, I mean, Elite FTS, a lot of us are powerlifters and whatnot, but what he's done with athletes is pretty remarkable. He was the head strength coach of Olympic sports at State University of New York at Buffalo. And, like, honestly, he just got done writing a book. It's called Conjugated You. And I just read it yesterday, and it's a fantastic read. Anybody who's interested in training clients or athletes, please pick it up, and we're going to talk about that. Nate, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
It's like I said, it's our pleasure. It's definitely our pleasure. Nate, can you kind of give us some background on you? I mean, I know a lot of people know who you are, but I'd like to hear from you if that's okay.
Sure. Well, I guess we can kind of go way back. I'm 39 now. I started training, like a lot of listeners probably, when I was 12. So strength has kind of always been a little kid, and like all the biggest, freakiest athletes, you know, were always my favorite, you know, so that all kind of started when I was young. Going through high school, just like a lot of your listeners too, I'm sure, I was trying to research stuff and trying to learn everything I could. And it's funny, it was back before the internet, you know, so we had to go to the grocery store and buy the muscle magazines and, you know, all that typical stuff, and order a book every once in a while. And, you know, so was kind of searching there. And then I remember probably later in high school, I got onto BFS a little bit, Bigger, Faster, Stronger. Mm-hmm. Worked pretty well for a year or two, you know. That was around my senior year in high school. And then I went to SUNY Rockport, was lucky enough to play football there. But it was D3, so we really didn't have a strength coach. You know, it was kind of, I think it was our O-line coach put the program together, you know. And it was good, you know, but it was, as a 20-year-old kid, I obviously knew better than everybody. So instead of just following that program, I was looking for my own thing and always kind of looking for the best, or, you know, the magic program or whatever. And it was, going into my senior year, I was researching how, Mike Allstott trained. Okay. The old fullback for the Bucks, right?
Yeah. Pushing the Hummers 50 yards. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I read somewhere that he used chains when he was benching and squatting. So I was like, well, what the hell is that about? So then I started researching that, you know, that led me in internet searches to some of Louis' stuff. I think it was an article on how to bench 600 pounds easy. And at the time I didn't understand gear or anything. So it was like 600 pound bench. What the hell, you know? So found that article. And then, I stumbled onto Dave's, periodization Bible part 2 article. And that like changed everything, because just the way it was broken down and training the different traits and stuff really made sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I hopped on that going into my senior year. I didn't have a really good understanding of the system. But it was good enough to kind of get me through. And my senior year, I just remember playing, and throughout the season, I felt stronger, felt more explosive. I felt healthier than I ever had. So I was, you know, that was the point I kind of started thinking, just, I could really be onto something, you know? And then after the season, I remember testing my bench. And my bench was only like 10 pounds off of my best ever. And this was right after the season. So, and usually you go in after the season and, you know, 200 pounds feels like 500.
Right.
You know, so that was another, and then I was like, okay, this is, so from there, I just kept researching more and more and more. That was around 2000. Around 2000, 5, we came to Buffalo because I was also a certified phys ed teacher.
Okay.
So we came up here so I could start grad school at UB. And while I was doing that, I started volunteering in the weight room at UB under Julia Ladusky.
Okay.
She was nice enough to let me come in and just observe and help out. And, you know, so that kind of kept going on that same path. And then at the end of my grad work in 06 or 07-ish, I was all set to do my final internship for grad school when I found out two weeks after I got accepted that the head coach was leaving. So I was kind of, everything was up in the air and I was a little bit panicked and stuff. And then my supervisor said, "Hey, Buddy Morris is going to come be the head strength guy." So
not bad.
I went from extreme panic to this is perfect. You know, I'd been reading Elite and stuff since 2000, you know, and following all his stuff for
Coach X, right? Wasn't he Coach
X?
Yeah.
It was like, "I'm going to intern on Coach X. Fuck yeah." So that all went real well. He was going to hire me so I did the internship and then I volunteered for a semester. He was about to hire me and then he took a job at Pitt, but they ended up bringing me on part time. And right about that time too, Paul Childress was working at UB. He brought Paul in to work. So it was pretty cool just from my background and stuff. I had, you know, 3 of Elite's team members at the university where I was about to start working. So that was really cool.
Yeah, not a bad gig. Not a bad setup, right? Yeah, not a bad group of people to work with. Shit.
Yeah. And it was funny too. We had some really good coaches. In addition to those guys, we had Ryan Groneman. We call him Groney. He actually had Joe Ken as his strength coach. So, you know, I had that influence, and we Matt Taylor, Brian Remy, we had some really, really good, smart coaches. It was a really good staff, you know, but everybody kind of went their separate ways and stuff. And I kind of hung around until I was there for about 10 years. And then the opportunity with Elite came up this past summer. So I've been with them since then. I've almost been sponsored for a year now. So.
Okay.
So things are going really well. That's my long-winded answer on my background in the conjugate method, I guess.
You know, it's funny. Like last year, I went to the sports-specific seminar that Elite put on, and I had never been to that. And I had never seen like a conglomeration of like the top strength coaches in the country, like in one place. And I don't think that you ever will. And I was introduced to Buddy Morris, and. Buddy Morris came out and he's like, "Hey," he goes, "anybody from Buffalo?" And, you know, somebody raised their hand. He's like, "Fuck Buffalo. Fuck you. Fuck Buffalo." He goes, "The only thing good that came out of Buffalo was my wife." And he just railed on Buffalo. But I was like, "Who is this guy?"
He did. That was pretty funny.
Were you there last year?
Yeah, I was there. Yep.
Okay. But when he was railing on it, I was just dying. I'm like, "Who is this guy?" But, you know, when I started reading more about Buddy, you know, like, I didn't know he was Coach X. I had no idea. Like, I'm an idiot. And, you know, I had read his stuff before, but I wasn't sports specific back then. Like, I didn't have a knowledge of sports specific. It was more like, you know, powerlifting, lift some weights. But it really opened my eyes, like, over the last several years, you know. And that's the neat thing that I think about this book, Nate, that you wrote, is you're taking conjugate and, like, you know, we all, like, and much like you, like, I read, like, I was on testosterone, I was on testosterone.net or whatever when I was, like, you know, in the early years, in 2000 or whatever, and Dave wrote that article, The Periodization Bible. I read it, and I was like, "Wait a second." That's when you used to print stuff out, and I printed it out, and I was like, "Oh, my gosh, this is crazy. Like, I'd never heard anything like this." You know, and you always hear linear periodization, but now you're training multiple strengths. And then it started to make sense to me, too. And then I started box squatting, got kicked out of a couple gyms for box squatting. And, you know, but it's your book, the way that you formulated it for athletes is amazing. Like, I think it's cool because you make it accessible. Let's go into the book real quick. How did that come about? Conjugated You.
I actually have been thinking about it for a while because... it was like with the internet and stuff, you start to see more and more what people do and talk to more people and stuff. And it was kind of weird. Like anytime I would talk to somebody, anybody that was doing Conjugate or West Side, however you want to say it. And I don't say West Side because right. out of respect, you right. know what I mean? Like I'm not there. I don't handle those guys. Like, so I don't say West Side because, you know, you're not West Side unless you're at West Side.
Absolutely.
But it's like, it seems like anybody you talk to, they say, well, yeah, we run an adapted West Side method. And it was, to me, like the method kind of on its own, you really didn't have to change a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, I'm kind of like, well, what are you modifying? I don't understand what you have to change so much. Cause we were running, you know, with some very simple adaptations. It was, you know, a conjugate model or a West Side model, you know, mm-hmm. we were box squatting and accommodating resistance and rotating exercises. And so I was like, and a lot of this stuff out there was kind of confusing, I thought. I don't know. It just like you'd read one thing 1 month and then 3 months later it was different, mm-hmm. which is the way it goes. I understand. But I wanted to put something out that was simple. But at the same time, like we really hadn't done anything. You know, we had to put it in place and have some results, I felt like, before I had kind of the right to write anything.
Okay.
So I kind of, you know, I held off on putting anything together. And then finally this summer I was like, all right, let's put it together. And like another thing was I had learned from these awesome people when I was coming up, you know, and you kind of always doubt yourself, like, well, mm-hmm. you know, people aren't going to learn from it or it's not going to be good. But then I was like, you know what? Like these guys are so fucking good. If I can take like 60% of what they taught me and put it out, it's still going to be good and be able to help people. You know what I mean?
It's going to be better than most of the other shit out there, right?
Yeah. So I finally got off my ass and got it together and, you know, it took, took longer than I thought, but you know, I originally planned to have it done by the end of summer, but that's not how things go, unfortunately.
Well, it's an interesting read because, like I said, I went through it the other day, and like not only are you taking it and you're taking like a conjugated method. Oh, okay. Let's go back again. Can you describe what conjugated is? Because a lot of people don't know. Like a lot of people might be, you know, have done 5-3-1 or linear or whatever in the past. Can you talk about what exactly is the conjugate method?
Yeah, so to me, and like I mentioned grad school and stuff before, my brain works very simply. Like I have to break things down, and that's kind of how I learn. So that's how I put things out. Like to me, it's just training multiple traits within the week so that you can push or raise those things for most of the year. Whereas like linear models, you work on something for a month, and then you switch to something else. And then you switch to something else. So to me, you kind of lose what you did the month before.
Much and like this you is where... I'm sorry. Much like you said in the book, you were talking about you can do sets of 10 at a certain percentage and then go to, you know, sets of 5. And then when you try and go to sets of 10 again, you lost that.
Right. Yeah. It feels terrible. You feel like you're going to have a heart attack. So yeah, just working on different things within the week instead of just the month. And that way you can push up a bunch of sporting traits or special strength traits, however you want to term it, you know, instead of spending so much time on one thing, I guess.
Okay. Well, I think it was, like, again, with West Side and whatnot, like, wasn't it Zat Sajorski that kind of influenced Louis about, like, you know, about acceleration and, like, speed? Can you talk about a little more about speed in the conjugate method? Because, like, if you train, like, you know, whether, quote-unquote, West Side, they talk a lot about speed. Can you kind of talk about that?
Yeah, well, you have, like, your force-velocity curve, right? And at the one end, we have max effort where everything's slow. And then as you go down, your weight goes down, your speed comes up. We always worked around 50% for our speed work on squats and bench, speed deadlifts when we did them. But then, like, to me, in my mind, it made more sense to go – so, like, let's say we had track kids – who we need to be faster than a power lifter, obviously,
mm-hmm.
To get kind of specific for that. like once they were starting to get ready for conference, what we would do is cut their bar weight down to maybe 30 or 40%, which still isn't true speed work, right? It's more speed strength work. But basically, as we wanted them to get faster, we would try to make their bar speed faster. So we would drop some weight off, put more bands on, because that speeds them up too, and then do it that way once they were going into conference. And then, like, we had jumps and med ball throws in almost all year. So that was kind of how we hit our speed work.
Which is what you do in this in Conjugated U. You talk about a lot of the medicine ball work, or you talk a lot about the box jumps. And so you're working on your explosive capability as well. So not only are you working on speed, you're working on explosion plus max effort. So
yes, yeah. Yeah, just like the model says, you work on all those things within the week.
Which, again, and like a lot of people that have done Westside before, or again, I say Westside, like you said, in respect, it's Conjugated. I've seen people that have trained Conjugated before, and what they'll do is they'll train their max effort work. And then, like me, when I was like younger and I could do it, we would decide we were going to train speed. And then when we do our speed day, we do our 8 sets of 3 or 8 sets of 2 or whatever we were going to do. And then we'd go, you know what? I feel strong. Let's go heavy. And what we do is we tear our shit apart. And then, you know, three or four weeks of doing this, we didn't know what we were doing. Our joints are achy. Everything's hurting, you know, and we didn't know anything about deloading back then. We were just trying to lift, you know. So we screwed ourselves in the programming is what we did.
We used to do that too. And you know what? I dreaded those days. Like, after 8 sets of 2 or whatever, I didn't want to work up. Yeah. I wanted to, but everyone else was doing it. So, you know, it's like, all right, fuck, here we go.
Peer pressure's a motherfucker, isn't it? We had this, I used to train with this guy, and I'll call him, his name's Bill, and another guy, Joe, and we would do speed, and then we'd all kind of look at each other, right? We'd get done with the speed, and we'd all look at each other, and we'd go, this is kind of light, you know? And then it went out through the door, so fuck it, you know, you just kill yourselves. But back to Conjugated U again, I like how you did, like, you know, it seems like, I'm hoping, because I'm older now, I'm 45, so I'm hope my joints are taking a hit, and I'm hoping that, like, the stability and the mobility work that I've been doing lately is going to start, like, you know, kind of accruing up and start to help my longevity in the sport, because I'm hoping that it helps, like, you know, younger athletes, too, because in our sport, it seems like, again, we want to lift the heaviest, and we always want to do that, but the idea of taking some time to do a little bit of stretching or foam rolling or some medicine ball throws or whatever, just even as a basic warm-up, a medicine ball throw or a lacrosse ball, it's not a bad idea. And I'm hoping that aids to longevity. And I think you hit that in this book. So
yeah, we talked about people modifying. To me, like, those were the only real modifications you needed. You know, a lot of the rest of the program is very similar. But it did seem to help our kids. I got really good feedback from everybody who would come over from other stuff. You know, it was usually within like a month or so, they would start saying, you know, my back feels better, my knee feels better, this, that. And it's just putting those small things in, I think, that makes a big difference. And really, like, a lot of lifters could. It's very global, very universal, the program. But like, as an example, and not to say you can't get very specific with your movements, I don't think that's always a bad thing. I think some people can take it too far, and then the lifting becomes too taxing on the athlete. Okay. You know, if you're trying to do too many sport specific things with the barbell and that, I think a lot of times when I see it, one, it doesn't make you stronger, which is what we're actually going after. And two, it can kind of beat you up, you know? So like, we had, our national champion shot putter. We had a national level, pole vaulter who was 120 pounds. You know, but she was just an intense kid, and she liked to train. She was very motivated. So her program was very similar to our shot putters.
Okay.
So, you know, like I said, not that you can't get real specific with it, but you don't have to. Because to me, it's just like they're athletes. We're trying to increase their horsepower. We want them to run faster, jump higher, be stronger. Like if you just take the plan and put it in place, it'll do all that.
I like that. And I think like I was talking to Josh Bryan about specificity, and Josh believes in like going from obviously general to more specific, but he's always talking about the trade-off between the two, where if you get too specific, then your strength lacks. And if you get too like just work just purely on strength, you have to make sure that these elite athletes, like a baseball pitcher, can still have that stretch reflex in his arm. And, you know, it's funny. It's like that. It's like an art to it, isn't it? Like it's almost like an art whenever you do this, isn't it, Nate? Like when you train an athlete.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can read as much as you want, but it's, you have to do it for a while to kind of get a feel for it, you know? And I messed some things up in the beginning for sure. But yeah, that's, I like how, what Josh says about that. You do have to get specific and you have to start prioritizing things you're going after. Yeah. But if you go too far, I think, and I've seen it before, you know, people want to do agility work all year long because they think their kids need to be faster, but then they're bitching at the trainers about, well, why are all my kids' knees and ankles all beat up?
Yeah.
Well, it's because you're doing the thing. You never give them a break. So yeah, you got to rotate in general and specific for sure.
And I think also like when in the book Conjugated You, you speak about how deloads are kind of like worked into the program. So like when you're doing your speed work and whatnot, or like, you know, maybe your third week, your fourth week, that type of a thing. Can you talk about how deloads are kind of programmed into your Conjugated You template?
Yeah. So like, here's one of the mistakes I made when I first started running the system. We would force them to deload every 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. And kind of what I found over time was people will say athletes don't like to train or whatever, but when I would give them that week off, not off, but we would scale things way back. And Dave talked about this a little bit. They knew it was a deload week. So they come in mentally, and you and I are probably the same way. We know it's a deload week. Mm-hmm. We go into the gym and it's like, well, why am I even here? I'm supposed to be resting. It's going to be an easy week. So mentally you're kind of checked out a little bit.
Right.
And we saw that with the kids, and it got to the point, like some of them would even complain about it because when they had to ramp it back up the next week, they felt like shit.
Yeah.
So over time, you know, I learned a little more, and we kind of built it in, like you said. And what worked was decreasing our speed week a couple sets. I'm sorry, our speed work a couple sets each week. So on the dynamic work, we would start up higher volume, more sets, take a couple off each week. But with the accessory work, we would start that low and build that up over the course of the 3 week block. Because the accessory work isn't really too taxing. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes you sore and stuff, but on your nervous system, it's not that bad. So that would come up. And then like, if we did need a deload, we would just kind of monitor the kids and see how they looked when they came in. You know, if they come in, they're all chatty and kind of got some, you know, they're usually good to go. But if they come in, no one's talking, they look like their dog just died, you know, it takes them forever to get through warm up. You know, maybe we'll pull a max effort out for the day, or, you know, instead of doing like a whole week deload, just pull max effort out for one day. Okay. Something like that, you know, kind of go more by feel, really.
Absolutely. And like, when you train with athletes, it's a constant state of assessment and then reassessment of your kids too. So
yeah.
You know, you don't want somebody like having like, you know, a funeral and then trying to max effort the next day if they're not mentally there. You've trained, I don't know, thousands of athletes. What are some common issues or mistakes people have when they're doing conjugate? Like, let's say they don't have like you as a coach. What are some of the mistakes you see people making in the system?
The biggest thing I see, and the people aren't paying attention to how the movements are coached or are done. And that's why I put all those videos in. And that's my background too. Like, I learned from Paul, who's a world-class lifter, you know. Yeah. Buddy was a big stickler on form. Grony, he's, you know, Julie was the same way, very technical. Grony, I always say Grony's like the best strength coach nobody knows about. Okay. Like, he can fucking coach. He can get a kid in a position no matter what. So, like, that's my background, is being very technical. Mm-hmm. But I also think, just like a lot of sports, like, fundamentals can make the most difference if you get very good at them. You know what I mean? So, like, everybody talks about proper neuromuscular firing patterns, mm-hmm, within the muscles and this. Well, if you do the movements correct, all that shit takes care of itself. So, like, I see people box squatting, but the box is 5 inches high and the kid's knees are caving in, yeah, and their knees are way forward. Like, those are the, you know, I think make sure the movements are done right and with the right intent, like pushing on the bar really hard. Even though it's lightweight, you're pushing on it as hard as you can. I think that makes a big difference. Okay. And then aside from that, probably adjusting too much, getting too far away from the system and how it's set up. You know, like you talked about deloads being built into the system. Mm-hmm. Well, to me, part of that is separating upper and lower body. Okay. But I feel, you know, then I see a lot of people do full body training, mm-hmm, multiple times a week. And to me, it's like, well, you're going in and you're taxing muscle groups in the body when it's not recovered yet. Or if you break it up, you know, don't modify your West Side system so much. And it'll take care of itself. You know what I mean?
Now, like the West Side, like it, like how they train at West Side, they do, like, you know, let's say, like every week or every other week, they change their max effort lift. So it'll be like they'll do a high box squat and then a low box squat and then maybe a deadlift variation. And then they do like these 3 or 4 week waves or cycles of these max effort, and they try and break their records and stuff like that. Are you doing the same thing? Or are you just sticking mostly to like box squats and benches, or like,
we would rotate every week typically. Like with our kids, once they were proficient with just a straight bar squat, which is usually about 3 weeks, they'd be ready for max effort. Same on bench. Once they learn how to bench, once they learn how to deadlift, you can start doing variants of that every week, because the difference between squatting with a straight bar and a cambered bar, yes, it's different to the body, but all the coaching cues and the things you're looking for are pretty much the same.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So once we got them comfortable with the straight bar, then we started rotating all the time.
Okay. That makes sense too, because, like, I mean, it's, you're taking, like, let's say a safety squat bar kind of throws you forward, makes you work different muscles. Box squat, high box squat, you can overload. Low box squat, you can't as much, probably bring your knees in a little bit, or your feet in a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I like that. I like that variation built in. And do you feel that the variations kind of keep your kids fresh too, and mentally?
Yeah, definitely. I think they'll kind of jokingly complain about it. Like, oh shit, what do we got today? But honestly, I think they like it, you know, cause they're never sure what's coming. And it's, to me, like, that's how you learn to compete too. Like, sometimes you just got to fucking step up and go, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it helps keep them healthy, not doing the same stuff all the time.
You know, it's funny because, like, I love gyms like 5-3-1. I really, really like that. I like how, like, you know, a linear model like that, I think it's pretty great for, you know, somebody starting out. I think it's, you know, I think it's awesome. Like, if you just want to go back to something, I think it's great. But the problem I had with linear, and it's nothing against gym either, it's just I'm fucking old. The problem I had with linear is I can't squat the same time. Like, I can't do, like, a squat, like, all the way down. My knees hurt, my hips tore. I got to be very careful with what I do. So I have to pick movements that are, you know, that I'm capable of doing at that time. And the thing is like, conjugate allows me to do that. conjugate allows me to pick, like, you know, my hip is kind of fucked up, so I can squat on a little higher box. I can still squat wide, but I can squat on a little higher box and kind of work those muscles. And I like how Conjugate allows you the variation of working like around injuries too, and I think that's very important, especially for like an older lifter like myself.
Right, so. Right. And that to me, like, that's what helps athletes too, like, because we have to deal with their practice and their injuries, you know. Like our basketball guys, they're like old men. And I don't know if it's they've just been running so long, you know, they're long, they don't have a ton of muscle, they don't have a ton of strength, but they act like they're freaking 70 years old, you know, they walk around sore and stuff, so it's really kind of similar. It's funny that you say that.
Yeah, you see that too. And then, you know, like, they're such explosive athletes too. They're so explosive, but, you know, their absolute strength is not the best, you know, and they don't really need, well, I don't want to say that. Absolute strength, they still need to be able to maintain their explosiveness and that type of stuff, but anybody can gain from being stronger or faster or more explosive, you know. Have you ever heard of a guy named Michael De La Pava?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, I referenced Michael. Michael's a power lifter. He owns Battle Axe Gym in Miami. And so, like, Michael was also a professional Muay Thai fighter for a while, too. He's just a badass, really big. He's a true badass. And he gave me a shirt, and on the very front of the shirt, it says, DBAP, don't be a pussy. And on the back of the shirt, it says, strength is everything. And
nice.
Yeah, I think it's fucking sweet. Like, you know, I'll talk. Michael, if you're listening, Battle Axe Gym has the coolest shirts I've ever seen. So, if anybody listening wants to get it, check out Battle Axe Gym. And Michael's got some really cool shit. You'll like it.
That's cool.
Okay. A couple quick things, Nate. In your box jumps, when you're doing box jumps, I noticed that you don't have them come off, like, when you're programming it, like, early, you don't have them coming off a box and then doing a jump. You have them, like, coming and doing an explosive jump onto a box. Can you tell me why you do that?
Yeah, at first I just did it because that's what I learned. You know, that's what people were doing that I learned from. But then later on I started to realize it's for injury prevention. And the more you think about it, like, the athletes have done – so, like, coming off a box and utilizing the stretch reflex, right, where I step off and then jump up to another box, they've been doing that their whole life. And a lot of these, like, D1 athletes started competing when they were 6 in their sport.
Right.
So, it's a lot of wear and tear on them. And, two, they've been doing it forever. So, how much better are we going to get them by doing more of that?
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, doing jumping, just standing on the floor or doing, like, a seated box jump, it's a different type of stimulus that's still training explosiveness, but it's not beating them up.
Right.
And they have to be fast and explosive without utilizing the stretch reflex in their lower leg so much. So we're still going after the trait we want, but it's a little safer. And Louie talked about this, like, you can do a lot more of it and not beat them up so much. So we can increase work capacity, right, and do more work, but not kill them so much. So, and what we would do is, like Josh talked about, getting more specific. So, like, let's say track, for example, as we got closer to conference, then we would start putting in more, like, true plyometric stuff.
Okay. You know, it's funny. It's funny we talk about that. You know, like, in, again, back to my fucking age, about 5 years ago, I was at the gym. I was at a powerhouse gym, and they had, like, a 40-yard track. So I'm trying to stay lean, so, you know, I'd always sprinted, you know? Like, I'd always do a couple sets of sprints, and, like, at the end of my workout, a couple sets of sprints, walk back, couple another set of sprints, walk back, and I see these three kids, and they're like, man, you're pretty fast. And, you know, I'm short as hell, too. So they're like, you're pretty fast. Can we race you? And I'm like, no, I don't want to. But I looked over, and I saw a pretty girl watching. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Yeah, sure, I'll race you, right? You know? So beat them, Nate. I beat all three of them. Like, I'm like,
nice.
And these are like 16-year-old kids, you know? So, and I was already warmed up. I mean, there's a million different reasons why I beat them, right? Just because if they were flying, they probably would have kicked my ass, but I was warm and everything. And so I beat them, and that was like 5 years ago, and my Achilles has never been the same. Like it just
really,
and it's just, you know, like I was so used to doing like the heavy max effort work, and I did speed work, but that acceleration and that, you know, that force application on the ground, like a quick stretch reflex, it affected my Achilles because I hadn't trained it in so many years, you know. It's funny looking back, thinking about how much of a dickhead you've been in your whole life, and that was one of my dickhead moments.
Well, so. here's a dickhead moment for you. So last year, my assistant, he calls me up one, or he texts me one morning and says, "Are you ready for Hatebreed, motherfucker?" he had talked about getting Hatebreed tickets, you know, and I figured he was just talking shit or whatever, but he actually got the tickets. You know, I haven't run in years. Like, I'm even careful running, like playing with my kids. Like, they want to race, I'm very cautious how hard I push because I don't want to tear some shit. So anyways, we're at the concert, and of course I wander down to the floor, and I'm like, you know what?
I know where this is going.
It's Hatebreed. I go to run into the pit, and I shit you not, the first step I take, I hear this loud pop, and it's down in my calf. And my first thought is I just ripped my Achilles tendon off. So I try to hobble my way through out the other side of the pit. I hobble back up the stairs. And it was just like, you dumb motherfucker. You know, like, you know better. But so anyway, it just, there's a little chunk out of my calf, but it wasn't real bad. But, you know, it's whatever. I guess that's how it goes.
I've been there, man. Like, I remember... I don't know. I was only probably, I don't know. I went to, there was a Disturbed concert, and that's when Disturbed was real big, and I went into the pit, and, you know, like, it just, I'm, like I said, I'm only 5'5", so, you know, I'm throwing around, these guys are throwing elbows and whatnot, and it was just fun. I just had a good time and stuff. And I remember this guy, like, I was hanging out with my buddy Gary, and Gary goes about, I don't know, about 6'1", about 280. He's just a mutant, right? Like, he's, like, just a mutant guy, he's farmer and all that shit. And so this one guy comes to us, and he's like, "Hey, man, throw me up," because he wanted to be thrown into the crowd, right? So we picked him up, and we threw him as high as we fucking could, and the crowd saw him go up, and instead of catching him, they just dispersed, and he landed on the wood, and it was, you know, I didn't, you know, it wasn't me landing on the wood, so
right.
Sorry, pal.
Good Lord.
It's what you get for...
But yet...
Not my fault.
That's funny. But it goes back to, like, you know, you have to constantly do that stuff if you want to be good at it. You know what I mean? So that's, like, you and me, we haven't jumped or sprinted, so that's not smart, you know? So, I don't know.
It's funny.
Yeah, it's a different stress to the body, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's funny how, like, you train your body to be, like, you know, you can be explosive and you can be fast as far as for, like, your acceleration of motion. But you're accelerating your motion in one plane, like as far as for a powerlifter, you know, I'm, you know, accelerating my motion in just a certain plane, like, you know, as far as for a deadlift, a squat, a bench, you know, an overhead press, that type of thing. But when you have to do it, like when you're an athlete and you have to do it in multiple planes and in multiple positions in your body, it's, I mean, you really have to be athletic. I mean, a powerlifter, let's face it. I mean, we're strong and whatnot, but... I mean, we do, our sport is squat, bench, and deadlift. But an athlete, to be able to train an athlete, and that's why I really liked what you did with Conjugate U, was because you're training, like, yes, you're training absolute strength, but you're also training explosiveness, but you're also doing mobility work, and you're also doing even, like, prehab work with, like, lacrosse balls and that type of thing. And I think, okay, to be honest, we're all stupid, so... We need to be told what to do at times, at least in my training. Like, I need to be told that. So I know that I should be doing a lacrosse ball on my lat or a foam roller on my lat or whatever before I bench. Do I do it? No. But whenever somebody says, "Hey, dickhead, do this," you need to keep doing that. I'm like, oh, I guess I'll do it, you know? So I like what you did. I really appreciate that.
No, thanks. It, you're right. It's funny how... Like, even if it's just written on the paper and someone else, you know, like, there's different stuff I'll follow in workouts. And something I normally wouldn't do, but oh, it's on the list that I'm supposed to do today, so I'm gonna make myself go do it. It's funny how we're programmed like that.
Yeah, we're just mind fucking ourselves. I mean, that's kind of what we do. So the other thing that I noticed in your work, and I noticed this in a lot of the things that you do, is you do a lot of unilateral stuff. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think for an athlete, it's important, to help with imbalances and things of that nature. But I've also seen it go like too far. You know, I've had coaches want to do things. Oh, we need to be sport specific, and they'll show me what they want to do, and it's like the whole program is unilateral, or I can't remember. Somebody wrote about it a few years ago on Elite, like, don't let your pendulum swing too far.
Yeah.
You know, so like, don't make your whole program kettlebells. Like, yes, they're good, but you know, so we tried to do something unilateral once a week.
Okay.
Just to have it in there and help and, you know, but not go too overboard with it.
I've never done a lot of unilateral stuff. So when I started to do it, I realized my stability was just for shit. And then I'd find something that my stability was shit on. And so then I'd add it, like, you know, let's say I do one leg squats with just rear elevated leg, you know, and it could be just holding kettlebells or whatnot, or even free weight or whatever, like just my body weight. But when I started to get better on that, I'd work it a couple weeks, my stability would get better. I'd feel my squat being a little more stable. And
yeah.
I think it's a constant state of assessing and reassessing. And when you're looking at an athlete, Nate, like, what are some of your cues? What are some of the biggest weaknesses you see in athletes today that maybe might not have had you as an eye? Like, what are some of the biggest weaknesses you see as far as for strength in athletes? Or I guess I'm stereotyping in general.
Usually, like, hips, hamstrings, and upper back is not good. And that's why I'm such a big proponent of the box squat. Like, if you teach a kid to get his feet out and keep his knees out when he squats, and I've seen this, you'll fix a lot of the hip problems and a lot of the mobility problems that they have. Because a lot of the mobility issues we see in the hips are because they're just so weak. Like, you know, basketball players, for example, their feet are out wide and they're supposed to be able to shuffle side to side. But you ask them to squat in that stance and they can barely do it. You know, that's a big weakness. And then upper back, hamstrings. And it's like, that's what's cool about the system. We have these weaknesses and everybody talks about them. Everybody talks about glutes and hamstrings are weak and upper back is weak. And we need to address those. Well, like, just follow the system and you take care of 99% of your kids. You know, because that's what all your accessory work, like, and even your main lifts are aimed at glutes and hamstrings and upper back. So if you, like, just follow the template, and it pretty much takes care of most of the, you know, once in a while you have some outliers that are really tight or really, you know, need some extra work here or there, but those are the big ones and the most common ones you'll see.
Okay. You know what I find a lot of people do it, and it's strength coaches, and it's like, I don't know, like Joe Schmo at the gym. Everybody tries to reinvent the wheel. People try and, like, you know, I'm going to do a box squat, Bosu ball, stabling on some fucking bands and, you know, try and hum a fucking diddly or whatever. And I'll have Eminem playing because I'm hardcore. And then, you know, like, but you see people try and reinvent the wheel all the time. And Jesus Christ, squat. You know, box squat, you know, get stronger, you know, I don't understand it. Another cue that I thought that actually helped me in your book and that I honestly can't wait to use for the bench is punch your hands. Like, it's something so basic, but it made perfect sense to me. You were talking about when you're bench pressing, you know, accelerate and punch your hands. It makes perfect sense to me, but I never thought of it that way. But it's going to help me become a little more explosive too. Where did that come from?
Groney taught me that way back we were when I first started, we were football players were benching, and not like I just kept hearing him say hands, hands, punch your hands, you know. And I was like, the fuck is that, you know? but then like even I remember one of the football players being like, man, I like when you coach because the shit actually helps, you know.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like one of those light bulb moments where you're like, okay, so when I'm coaching, when you coach people, you got to say things that make sense. And that actually, you know, like if I tell a kid drive, 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 or up, 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 well, no shit, right? They know they got to do that. Like, how do you help them? So, and you know, that's where I picked it up. And but then over time too, like I found if I did that myself, it took pressure and stress off my shoulders and pecs.
Okay.
You know, like everybody benches and they think your pecs should get real sore and your shoulders. Well, no, like the pec and shoulder is going to get strong just from the movement. Mm-hmm. So if you can program your body to like punch your hands or whatever, when you do it right, you'll feel that stress in your hand and arm instead of kicking the shit out of your shoulder joint.
I like that too, because it also makes you want to squeeze the bar harder. And then when you punch your hands, you're kind of pulling apart on that bar too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of activating all that stuff. It's really fascinating stuff, man. I like I said, I think as just a power lifter, and, you know, I've trained some athletes, not a lot, but mostly power lifters and whatnot. I think this is real world application. I think it's something that you can take, and you also put templates in the book for certain athletes, for baseball players and for, you know, track and field, that type of stuff. I think it's real world stuff. And I think it's like, it honestly, and I mean, it reminds me of a lot of Dave's writings, because, you know, Dave Tate writes a lot of real world stuff and he's no bullshit. And I see that in your writing. So.
Wow. That's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, that's what I was hoping. I wanted to make it simple and I wanted to, you know, be something somebody can pick up and read it once and feel like you have a pretty good understanding of the system and throw it in place, you know, because
it's good stuff. It's good stuff, Nate. My question too is like, can you talk a little bit about during football training, like let's say we're training, getting ready for the football season, you know, I'm supposed to get so strong as I can possibly get, and also be able to, you know, try and prevent injury. But over the season, it's hard to, you know, maintain that. But for certain, you know, and you have to do that for, you know, however many weeks your season is. But for, like, let's say I'm prepping for, like, a track and field meet, or I'm prepping for, like, you know, I'm just prepping for a meet in something. How do you peak your athletes? Can you give me an example of some of the things that you do?
Yeah, so we follow the principle, the delayed transformation principle, which is basically the circa max phase that Westside uses.
Okay.
Like your hardest workout's going to be 3 weeks out from your meet, because that 21 days later, what you're doing should display itself. So like most of the year we're building up through our waves. Well, when you're going to peak, 3 weeks out is your hardest one and your highest volume, and then you taper down from there. That's in the book where we talk about the circumax phase for athletes.
Mm-hmm. You taper down your intensity or you taper down your volume?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Because, you know, we want them, like, from 3 weeks out into the competition, like, you have to keep them stimulated, but that's it. Right, we're not going to get any more training effect outside of just having CNS stimulated. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I talked about some mistakes I made before. Early on, we did kind of a circa max with our throwers 3 weeks out from regionals, and then I scaled them back too much, too soon. And they, like, everybody was having a good year, and then they got to regionals, and everybody kind of shit the bed. And a couple of my indicator kids, like kids that come in and train hard and you can trust, they came back and they're like, yeah, we just felt flat. And I was like, oh, shit. You know, we pulled you back too much. Because if you start detraining them too soon, like for you or me, we're older. We probably like that going into a meet because we'll feel mm-hmm. fresh. But they start feeling weak and, like they said, flat. So you have to. There's a balance there that you got to kind of mess around with.
Okay.
But yeah, that's how all my peaking was based. You know, just start shifting your training. Like, we'll keep max effort in. You know, our max effort might turn into heavy days where we work up to like something that feels like an 8 out of 10, mm-hmm. and then cut it. But so because then we start to put more priority on our speed work because we want to be faster or whatever you're going after, for example.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff, man. Like I said, I think it's real world application, in which case, like, anybody can read an engineering book. It doesn't mean they're going to understand it. But if you take something that people can understand and apply, that's kind of the hallmark of a really good teacher, I feel.
Right. Like, yeah. Or my fifth grade reading level. That might be the cause of it too.
I got
it. Whatever it is, we'll take it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed some swear words in there and shit, and I like that. Like, I'd rather have somebody like be realistic on that.
I agree.
can you isn't it fucked up when you think about it? Like, I mean, when I started this stuff, like, you know, and again, I'm not a power lifter. I'm just some schmuck that likes to work out. But, you know, I compete, but, you know, whatever. I have fun doing it. But isn't it funny, like, with the advent of the internet and with the advent of, like, you know, like testosterone.net taking, like, you know, a mass of people, like this huge mass of people that knew nothing about strength, and they started putting Charles Poliquin on there, and they started putting, like, Louis on there, and Dave and Wendler and all that stuff. And then when Dave, you know, started Elite FTS and they started putting all this free content on there, it's amazing how much content is out there that, me being an older lifter, I fucking wish I had when I was a younger lifter.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much stuff. Yeah. But, you know, Jim talked about, you know, he felt that he was lucky he didn't have it because he actually had to try stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then he kind of figured out what didn't work, but I think the internet is, like, it's making people stronger because, like, it's changing everyone's perception of what strong actually is, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's all these mutants pulling 800 pounds, like, all over YouTube now. Whereas, like, in 1980, you know, you might hear some guy two counties away that pulled you know what I mean? It's, like, kind of changes everyone's perception. And it's, I don't know, it's weird. It's kind of cool.
It is cool, and too, it's like, you know, like when you went to an old powerhouse gym, if you did 3 plates on a bench, like, oh my god, that guy's fucking strong. But then, you know, like when I started at Detroit Barbell, like, you know, I go in there and Clay Brandenburg's got 950, and then Tim Hensley, did you hear what Tim just did?
No.
At 204, I think he was 204, he did an 8-something bench at 204.
Jesus.
Like, and you see that, and you're like, fuck, you know? And then Julius Maddox just hit 700 raw. Like, not in the gym. It was in the gym. It's Josh Bryant's client, but he...
Good Lord.
...fucking hit 700 raw, and to be honest, I think this guy... Like, I saw him at the Eddie Cohn seminar. I went to Eddie Cohn and Josh Bryant seminar in Indiana last month. And, okay. You know, because I just wanted to meet Ed Cohn and just, you know, if he would just sweat on me, or if he could have spit on me, I'd have drank it, you know, because something I'm going to get out of it, right? And so, like, I saw Julius Maddox and TD do 585 for a double on the bench, and they waifed the bar like you or I would waif 135. Like, I never saw anything with that. I never saw anything like that.
That's ridiculous.
But you see these guys, and you see them on YouTube, and you see the fucking idiots too. But I think with, like you said, like when I was at, or like when I said when I was at Detroit Barbell, it took my perception of strong and just shit all over it. And right. Now all of a sudden, you know, like if you had, they weren't even going to fucking spot you over there if you didn't have 4 plates on the bar and a bench. you know, like they'd look at you and go, pussy, you know, and hope you die, right. You know, but that's how it was. And I think you're right. I think it's changed our perception and also brought like people like Zat Zyorski and Mel Sif and, you know, Polykin and all these great people that have, you know, laid the foundation for a lot of the stuff we do, Louis and Bompa and all that stuff. Those guys laid the foundation for everything that we do. And we just steal from them basically, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool how much information is out there, really.
Absolutely. Well, Nate, I've got about an hour of your time already, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on. If people want to get the Conjugated You book, and please, if just get the book, guys, it's worth it. It's worth the read, especially if you're training athletes. Especially, you know what? If you want something in your library to add to your, you know, super training or your Bompa and all that stuff, add this to your library. Where can they get it?
It's on exclusively on EliteFTS.com under the education section. And I also have a link up on my Instagram in my profile, right to the book. And we also have a Facebook page, Conjugate You, with a link where you can get it, which I'm hoping to build that up as more people get the book, kind of start a little community where people can come in and share ideas and, you know, say what's working for them and kind of build it up from there. So any one of those spots, you can grab it.
And can people contact you with that too?
Like any of my social media stuff, Facebook, my Instagram's NateHarvey2600. So I'm on there. I try to answer all questions. I don't think I missed anybody yet. So yes, contact me.
Well, Nate, I just want to thank you so much for being on. I mean, you've been more than gracious with your time. And like, it's funny because like you talk to people, like doing a podcast, you talk to people and sometimes you're like, oh, that's a cool interview. And then you talk to other people and you're like, oh, I'd like to have a beer with that fucker. And that's honestly how I feel, man. You're if you ever get out to Michigan and you want to come out to either Strength Depot or Detroit Barbell, it's on me. We'd love to have you out there. And just, you know, just if you ever get out here, please look us up.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Maybe I'll get out there on some installs with Elite and I'll look you up.
That would be awesome. Are you going to the Arnold this year?
I'm not sure yet. Okay. I think a lot of the team members are going to be down there, but I got to be down the next weekend too for the sports performance thing.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I should know within the next week or so what's going on with that for sure. I'd like to go. I want to go down.
Quickly, just real quick before we go, and if you got time, J.L. Holdsworth has a thing called, is it RPS? Is that what it is?
RPR.
RPR, that's what it is. Can you give me, what exactly is that? Because I don't know anything about that, but I've heard so much about it.
It's some voodoo black magic shit that works. I went and got my level one certification. And so it's, you go through different points, reset points on the body. And I don't know the exact science, how it works. So when you go to the workshop, all the people that are there are, you're basically practicing on each other.
Okay.
So it's not like I had the best of the best. Now I did have JL hit a couple spots and stuff cause I was having some issues or whatever. But it's not like I had the best of the best people doing this to me, but I had been having some hip issues and stuff going into the seminar, that basically cleared up within a couple days after I did it. So it's like, whatever it is, however the science works, it works. I'm a huge, huge proponent of it. Yeah. if you have a chance, check it out for sure.
Yeah, they got one in, I think, February coming up. I think, okay. I'm going to sign up for, so.
Yeah, it's weird. So, like, my drive to Columbus is 6 hours.
Okay.
And usually, as I'm driving home, like, each time I get out of the car, I'm more tight and more stiff. But after I got reset, every time I got out of the car, I felt better. Because whatever they do, it lets you, like, it calms your brain down and lets your adapt. If you have, if you like compensations, it lets those things reset so your body starts working the way it should. And it was like every couple hours I get out of the car and I'm like, holy shit, I feel better.
Fuck.
It was, yeah, it's really, really cool. I'd definitely check it out if you get a chance.
I'm definitely going to. Real quick, I went to Tricovery for the first time for massage therapy, and a friend of ours, a lady who sponsors a show, she's like the massage therapist for the Detroit Lions. Shout out to Tricovery and Jeff Kong and Becky and all those people. But like, I'd never gone to a massage therapist before this year, and so like, she's cute and she looks really nice and stuff like that. Holy shit. Like, all I kept thinking was, what's a fucking safe word, you know? Like, right. I thought a gag ball was gonna pop out for sure, but it definitely did help. But Nate, it's been an honor talking to you, man. I'm sorry I took so much of your time, but I could bullshit for a while, so I appreciate it. Please, anybody, go get the book Conjugated You, hashtag get strong hurt feelings. We appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
That's been my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hold on the line, Nate. I'm going to end this, but hold on the line if you will.
Sure.
All right, thanks. All right, for Strength Depositions, this is Chuck Zarowski signing off, and thanks for listening, everybody, and have a good day. Radio Network.